You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of October 9th, 2019, and this podcast episode is out of control.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Experience Points podcast. My name is Scott Juster.
And I'm George Albor.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net. It is a serious but not humorless conversation about video games. This week, Control.
Control.
This week, we're doing a debrief on Control, highly classified for your eyes only.
redacted. Yeah, if you hear silence, redacted. It's not us forgetting to edit the podcast. It's just we're not allowed to tell you that part.
If your phone starts vibrating and darting around the room, don't worry. It's just an object of power.
Yes.
We are going to... So, like usual, we're going to do a debrief on this game. We're going to talk a little bit about the structure and mechanics. We'll give a spoiler warning before we talk about anything too revealing about the plot. And we'll wrap everything up with how we feel about it. All right. Control. Where do we start?
Control. I always like to talk about our thoughts before we ever started playing this game.
Yep.
Are you familiar, or were you familiar before going into it with Control? Were you excited by it? Were you anticipating it? Did you play Quantum Break at all?
I mean, so this is even going even further back. This is the first Remedy game I've ever finished.
Yeah.
Of course, I know of Max Payne and Max Payne 2. I've been super influential.
Max Payne is the only Remedy game I've finished.
I have not played Alan Wake.
I played 10 minutes of Alan Wake. It's on my Steam. It's on my Steam library.
I mean, Alan Wake is one of those games that's on everybody's Steam library. Like, that game just had a weirdly prolific tale.
Yep.
I did not play Quantum Break, although I liked all of the, I mean, I guess this is a Remedy thing in all their games. There's just a lot of weird FMV and strange audiovisual stuff.
Yeah, and Quantum Break, I recall, was their attempt at doing a sort of multimedia thing.
Wasn't there going to be like episodes or something too?
Yeah.
Like they were going to have like a TV show?
There was going to be a TV show because it was one of the actors from Friday Night Lights, if I recall correctly.
Sweet.
Saracen, I want to say his name was. Weird. Cool. Cannot
believe
it.
Was it also the guy who plays Littlefinger in that game as well?
Peter Baelish.
I have a feeling he was the bad guy or something.
I wouldn't be surprised. He's a great villain.
Yeah.
I had not played
any of those games. So, and you played like 10 minutes of Alan Wake.
Of Alan Wake, yeah.
Yeah.
And I actually totally forgot that this was a Remedy game until somebody reminded me it was out, and I remembered the trailer from E3 was super weird and wonky. Yeah. And when I realized, like, oh, there's, you know, these, the way that they render the protagonist is so obviously like the actor. Role-playing it, and then as per your conversation with all of the like weird FMV stuff, where there are times where you get like a phone call, for example, and right. You can see, you know, an actual person's recording, or maybe more to the point, when you find videotapes of one of the scientists, you can see it's an actual person. It's just an actual film, essentially.
Is the actor that plays Jesse, she's the protagonist, is she a well-known actor?
I don't think so. I know that I saw, I've seen her before, but I feel like maybe it was just in an interview about it.
Okay, got it. Yeah, so I mean, I was going into this fairly ignorant of their actual games, other than the fact that, I mean, Remedy's one of those games, one of those studios, I'm trying to think of an equivalent studio, but their games feel like, it feels like they have an outsized reputation.
Yep.
Because they're one of these studios that, I mean, honestly, they're one of these studios that kind of don't exist anymore, where they're not part of some, you know, massive corporate structure, but they're not an independent game. I mean, they're not like a small independent game studio.
Yep.
It's kind of interesting. Like, they're not Activision, but they're not like a 5-person team.
They kind of always remind me of Sucker Punch.
Yeah. Similar. But I hadn't really paid too much attention to this game until people started describing it, the themes of the game, and actually saying some interesting stuff about the gameplay. And I was like, okay, well, like, this is it. Maybe I'll dive in.
Yep.
What did you know going in?
I mean, that's about it, other than that it was weird, which is what I was most excited right. for. And to be fair, you know, the game does a very good job from the beginning of being strange, you know, like yeah. it takes place entirely inside of a corporate building.
Yeah.
But they never really, I think to the game's credit, they never really encounter a moment where it feels as though this is getting repetitive in terms of the environmental design. Like there's a lot of weird shit going on, and there's enough weird shit right off the bat, and it continues to be weird that it never really lets up and never really runs out of steam from my perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think they tweak the environment just enough and the game lasts long enough, but not too long in that right. it gets extremely repetitive.
Yeah.
And I guess for folks that haven't played it, I mean, this is at the most basic level, a third person action shooter where yep. at a certain point you get some supernatural Jedi-like powers.
Yes, a very Jedi-like powers. In yeah. fact, I would say it's probably some of the better Force push powers right. that you've seen in a lot of Jedi games.
So, I mean, out with it. What did you think about this game?
I thought it was okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I was, to be honest, I was a little let down. Hmm. So, to talk a little bit about the story, right? Mm-hmm. If you have you ever read or heard of the SCP Foundation?
So is this collaborative yes. storytelling wiki that is, yeah.
Correct.
I've run across it a few times and then gotten scared and closed the browser.
I highly recommend if you were into Control at all, or if you are into just weird horror sci-fi stuff, check out SCP Foundation. It is essentially as you said, a collaborative wiki that is an in-fiction version of basically what Control is, which is yep. it's a facility that documents and protects paranormal objects. And some of those objects, in fact, the majority of those objects are mundane household items that have some bizarre, terrifying, underlying element that makes them super creepy or deadly, or maybe not deadly, but just bizarro or weird in some way, right. shape, or form. That is functionally the plot of Control, such that I don't want to use the word ripoff, but it is very much a ripoff of SCP Foundation, which is fine because we have only one SCP video game. I think it's a PC game, a little indie project, and it's not very good, and it's very horror-based. And Control takes that idea and brings it to life a little bit more. There's another television show also similarly themed called The Lost Room, which is also about weird mundane objects that have magical powers. All of that stuff is very cool and very interesting, and the vast majority of the interesting elements from Control, from like a narrative perspective, just like the weird sci-fi elements, not the main plot line, but just the weird objects that the Federal Bureau of Control, which is the facility that you're in the video game, the objects that they collect are found in little log entries that you find, little video feeds that you find. And it's cool and very interesting, but it felt like when I was reading them, I was just reading subpar SCP Foundation entries and pining for what an actually very good SCP game might be. This is the closest we'll get. And again, I don't hate the game, but I thought that from a world-building perspective, it was ground I had already sort of trodden. And so it felt like it wasn't as like a shocking or interesting environment that I think a lot of people reacted to positively when they jumped into Control.
I think you obviously know more about it than I do, but just like the few times that I've come across it on the internet, that stuff has always been, it's also just a cool oddity where it's like, oh, these are a group of people. I don't even know how many people have ever contributed. It must be a massive number, that are creating this little universe, and yeah. it just keeps growing and growing, and you have different styles. Like sometimes you'll read different entries and they'll read a little bit different, or you know, they'll be about different types of themes or things or yep. whatever. That is cool.
Yeah, like just as one example, right? There's a really famous object in the SCP Foundation lore. God, SCP Foundation's so good, by the way. You should really check it out. One of the most famous examples is this like weird, creepy, wooden doll that's like 8 feet tall with a massive head that's like always crying and like giving off like blood and feces and shit like that. And if you ever look away, it's basically the angels from Doctor Who. If you ever look away, it will move at like light speed and snap your neck if you're in the room, right? So if you're ever required to be in the room, you're required to have like two people, and one of them needs to look at it at all times, and one of them has to say like, I'm gonna blink or whatever, right? Mm. The same concept is used in Control with a refrigerator. Right. In like a particular scene where you find a guy who's forced to be staring at this refrigerator and cannot blink, or the refrigerator will eat him or something like that.
Right.
You know?
Right.
There's a lot of little elements like that that are nods or just straight sort of adaptations of SCP Foundation material.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think for my part, the stuff that they did combined with the sort of David Lynchian / X-Files vibe that they're going for, there's a certain charm to government bureaucracy.
Yes.
Where it's just, okay, here's a bunch of memos of people typing up their daily reports, but it's about, you know, a talking toaster or whatever.
Right.
Or here's a bunch of people that are comparing their... how shitty their jobs are, and this guy's complaining about how all he has to do is open up envelopes with teeth in them, and then this guy's complaining about like another thing. So like is that sort of stuff I thought was a cool world building exercise.
For sure. Yep. And I think that the game is actually strongest when it really leans into that weird stuff. Mm-hmm. There is a series of side missions where you have to find some of these objects, objects of power that have escaped from their containment facilities. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many of these you did. Did you do these?
I did a handful of them, just opportunistically, like when I came across them.
Right. So there's a few that really use the way that video games can just fuck with space and time.
Yes.
In really interesting ways. Like,
yeah,
there's a platformer where you have to like jump over the ground and it's moving and rotating, or there's like an interesting puzzle that's basically like a stop and go, so you can only go when it's green, you have to stop. Yep. When it's red. And each time that you are finding one of these objects of power, you're required to sort of navigate a really weird paranormal space that's kind of unlike any other space in the video game. That stuff I thought worked really, really well and was super cool, because I think fundamentally the most interesting thing about Control is the same thing that's most interesting about SCP, which is it's always fascinating to find this weird magical object that has weird properties that can change the environment that you're in and force you to behave in a different way. And its own little story, right? Like one of them is a duck, or one of them is like a pink flamingo, or a radio, or the refrigerator, right? Like those I think are the best moments in the game. A lot of the other elements, like I think essentially the main storyline, which is you are looking for your brother and you showed up in this building and you have a weird mysterious past, is largely uninteresting to me, and I thought was pretty boring.
Mm. I was so excited to talk about this game because it's been a long time where I've had such high highs and such low lows in the same game.
Yeah, yeah.
From everything, from all angles, whether it's the story, there were just some parts of the story that I, even though this isn't too spoilery, but at a certain point in the game, you find a scale model of a town.
Yes. Yep.
And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing.
Yeah,
like,
super cool. A town that you are from, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And just like the conspiracy starts to unfurl itself in a way where you realize these characters are part of this much bigger thing, and there's a shadowy government entity that has always been kind of pulling the strings, but at the same time, it's having its strings pulled.
Yep.
And then then on the other side, there's just like extremely well-trodden, tropey kind of characters, especially the main gal. I forgot her name, but she's like the second in command.
Right.
It's like, oh, cool. She's a grizzled veteran soldier. Like, cool.
Yep.
Like that. There's a million of her. Yep. But so and I just that, and then also just playing the game. I mean, there were so many times where I was like, man, I'm going to throw this controller.
Yes.
I'm going to throw this controller across the room. And then there were other times where I was like, this is one of the best games I played all year.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so as the game progresses, you unlock different abilities. And I think really the game is at its best when you've unlocked almost all of them.
Yeah.
With few exceptions.
Yep.
And there are moments where when you are using your powers in like a really clean and fluid way, it feels, man, at its best, at its truly best, which I think, to be fair, is a little bit rare. It feels the way that Spider-Man feels, where you are in control of all of the things and you are surviving. And when you excel, you know that it's because you've put in the work and you it's all you, right? It's not just you're smashing buttons. You're actually like executing pretty complex maneuvers by, you know, flying around and lifting one object and throwing it while at the same time shooting somebody else and then moving that body and that kind of cool experimental gameplay when you're really like feeling your abilities. But at other times it feels like you are really just wrestling with the controls and you're dying out of nowhere. Like there's almost zero divide between this game is too easy and this game is too hard.
Yes. it is difficult for this game to achieve flow state.
Yeah.
Where you're challenged enough for it to be interesting, but it's not just running you into a brick wall at every turn. I was thinking about that, just that dynamic of there were so many times in this game where I basically got two-shotted, or it's something starts shooting at me, I don't know where it is, and then the second shot comes and kills me, and then I go back into the room after loading up and just wipe the room easily.
Yeah.
And it's like, what happened? Like, is that just random? Like, were they just positioned? The enemies were positioned in a weird way. I mean, it was frustrating.
A lot of it, I think, are controls that are just not quite up to snuff in terms of what you're trying to do. Right. Mm. So for example, eventually you will unlock the ability to grab objects from the air that are coming at you. Right. Mm-hmm. Some of these objects will do an insane amount of damage, like rockets, for example, or there are enemy types called the Hiss that will be flying through the air with a bunch of objects floating around them, and they'll throw one of these objects at you. And if it hits you, it could basically, you know, it won't one-shot you, but it'll pretty close to one-shot you. So if you're already low, you're going to take a huge amount of damage, right?
Yep.
When you are exhibiting the most finesse, you are grabbing those objects out of mid-air or waiting until they get near you and then tossing it back at them, right?
Mm-hmm.
But too often, the game will have you pick up an object that's nearby and doesn't really sticky to the thing that's coming to you. So you'll grab like a fucking folding chair when really you meant to grab a rocket launcher. And so that rocket will hit you in the face, right? That's extremely unsatisfying. And you could see that all of the time. I think it's probably most clear when an enemy will lob a grenade and you can eventually pick up those grenades because it will highlight the object that you want to pick up and you'll see it flicker because it doesn't know whether or not you want to grab the grenade or some other object in the environment. And because throwing objects is so fundamental to the game, they will actually let you just rip out chunks of the wall, right?
Yeah.
So the result is there is always something else for the game to auto lock onto that isn't the thing that you want to lock onto. And it's just so inconsistent that it doesn't let you actually exhibit that level of finesse.
I think that that's a great example of, again, of the highs and lows of this game. High, it's an extremely elegant solution to the contrivance of having to have ammunition to force throw things.
Yep.
It's like, of course you don't need ammo to force it. You could just take a chunk of these bricks, like you could rip anything out, which I think is great because then all you're worrying about is your actual meter versus the ammo, the contrivance of, oh, only certain objects in the environment can be picked up. Like that's always so annoying in a game where you have to make those concessions where in this game, they just were like, oh, well, why do we have to make that concession? We can just have effectively infinite throw ammo because you're just going to rip a chunk of the wall out. I think it's a great solution.
Yeah.
At the same time, super low point where because you can rip anything out, to your point, it's hard to target anything.
Right.
So I never felt like I was strategically throwing things all that often. Every once in a while I would, but it was just more, I'm going to hit the R button and whatever comes to my hand, I hope it's good.
Yeah. You grab it and it's like a stuffed doll. Fuck.
Right. Oh, I shouldn't have had this battle in the pillow factory.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's exactly right. And that I think carries over with a lot of the other abilities that you get, right? Like flying doesn't work in exactly the way that you want it to work, because they also provide a limitation on how high you can hover. And there's like weird little ways that you can augment it, right? Where if you're flying, your bullets are doing more damage, but you're so outside of cover in those moments, and enemies can hit you so hard that I almost never left the ground willingly unless it was doing some sort of puzzle platforming maneuver. Yeah. You know?
Did you use the dash a lot?
Yeah, I did, with some frequency, but not really to get into like melee range, mostly to avoid a missile coming at me that I failed to grab or didn't think I could grab in time.
I started, so again, highs and lows. High, it's just so satisfying to see her struggle with flight.
Yep.
Because that's exactly how you would react. If all of a sudden you gain the power to levitate and fly, you would kind of awkwardly dangle your way through the air.
Yeah, yeah.
And it felt and looked so authentic, which is a weird thing to say about humans flying. But to your point, it is floaty. It does expose you. And it wasn't until towards the end of the game when I realized, oh, okay, what I should do is basically float in. I should mimic my enemies and I should create a shield around myself, fly into the air, dash over, and then use the like Superman ground pound to, you know, close the distance.
Right. Smart. I never did that.
So but that's one of the other things about the game is you in no way do you have to unlock all of those abilities. Like I didn't unlock the Superman ground pound until super late in the game. I mean, almost the last part.
I'm going to give another example of some bad mechanics.
Okay.
Right. So flight. When you unlock the power of flight, it's pretty late in the game. And if you're doing the side quest where you are finding the objects of power, you'll encounter a sort of, you'll go into another dimension and you'll encounter this like weird alien boss thing that you have to fight. And that alien,
fuck that thing.
That boss will hammer the ground, or rather shoot the ground, and destroy large chunks of blocks from out of the ground. Now that thing is really high up in the air, so in order to shoot at them or grab their weapons, you're tilting the camera pretty far back, such that because it's so close to your body, it actually cuts off the lower half of your body and you can't actually see the ground. Which
you're not looking at the ground, which now has holes in it.
Which now has holes in it, right? That wouldn't be as sinful as it is, which is truly sinful. Like I genuinely, this made me so fucking mad, right? But when you hit the flight button, you have to have ground to jump off of. So if you fall down a hole, all you'll do is hover for a moment briefly and regret your life choices to play this fucking game instead of actually taking off the way that you would think flight would work, right? It's a non-intuitive way for you to experience flight. It comes at the exact bad time where you're not entirely sure how flight works in the fucking video game.
Yeah.
It really just does a field work of the camera in those moments, intentionally hiding the most important information you have during that battle. And add two on top of that, in one of those scenes, you have to then replay this entire run up back to get to that boss every time you want to take on that fight. It's fucking mind-blowing. And there were absolutely moments in this game, that being one of them, where I was like, maybe I just won't finish this game. You know? In fact, I would say if there was not a general dearth of games right now available that are like, you know, great games on my console to play on my TV, I probably would have stopped playing Control.
Yeah. It's it is just such a feast or famine type of game.
Yep.
Because on the other end of the spectrum, there were encounters where it never felt this good, but there were echoes of the latest Doom game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where you're constantly moving. This is not a cover shooter. I mean, if you play it like a cover shooter, you're just going to get blasted over and over again. So you have to constantly be on the move. You get health by attacking enemies. So it incentivizes you to get in the mix and dash around and restore your health that way.
And you can see the health on the battlefield. So there are times when you're super low, you're like, fuck it, mad dash out into the open to pick up, you know, the health orbs that you know were dropped there from a fight that you had moments ago.
And then because I actually like how they handle the weapons in this game where you have infinite ammo, but it has to recharge. And so it's like, okay, I'm going to spend my clip and then switch to my psychic powers. And then when those are done, I'm going to switch back to my gun because the cooldown will be done by that time. And I mean, there are cool little timers. And then I get rocketed back to Earth by the fact that why can you only carry two guns at the same time?
Right.
There's only like six guns total. And for half the game, you probably only have four of them.
I mean, they're magic guns, God. I don't know. Maybe they have to imprint them.
It's like there's more than enough buttons on the controller to satisfy all of those guns, and it's irritating having to go into a menu. And it's not like you even have to swap out your loadouts at a save point. You can swap out your guns at any time. So there's no real reason other than this weird N64 era of having to go into a menu to re-equip guns thing that you have to do that. Also, I'm just going to put this out here right now. Early GOTY's category is not every game needs crafting.
Yeah, 100%.
We've been in this mode for such a long time in video games, and this game, of course, has crafting. You have to find items to upgrade your guns, blah, blah, blah. Fine, whatever. It's just more of an annoyance. Also, not every game needs perks.
Yep.
You then have these other perks that you can add to your guns or add to your person in general to get more abilities. Even those wouldn't be so bad, except for the fact that you have a very limited number of inventory spaces, and it is exceedingly difficult to organize and sell the ones that you don't need anymore.
Yeah, it's extremely manual. You automatically pick up all of the shit that you walk over. I mean, it's such a minor gripe, but Jesus, like, come on. Can we just, like, especially, it makes it so much worse knowing that, over half of the type of things that you can add to your gun are pretty fucking useless, you know?
Yeah.
Like, do you really want to increase the power of your shield where you're not killing any enemies?
And also, there's five different perk levels where you can have, you know, shield boost number one, shield boost number two, and, you know, halfway through the game, fuck anything below a four. You know, I'm not going to equip anything below that. So it's just... But there's no easy way to sort or sell them, or there's no easy way to just deconstruct them on the battlefield. You have to add them to your inventory and then go in and sell them. These are solved problems. Like these are problems that loot games have solved years ago. And so it's just kind of crazy that there's these basic UI problems that exist throughout the game, and ironically only get worse as the game goes on because you pick up more and more stuff.
And especially when at that point you've decided what elements and attachments to your gun you like the best and want to have. Like, it's bonkers that you're still picking up. And even when there are elements where it rewards you retracing, going back to older places, because you Zelda-like unlock new areas with new abilities, or there are side missions that will take you back to old facilities. When they're killing enemies, you will find lower tier items again. When you open
just
chests,
cluttering
and stuff
up your shit.
Just like, this is literally useless. Can I just have a button that's like auto scrap anything below three?
Yeah, I just need to put in a macro. Like, yeah, if anything comes in that's less than purple, get it out of my face.
Right. I mean, it's very gripey, but. It's those types of elements.
It matters, though. Like,
it does,
you have to you have to interact with that system a lot. I mean, the map is terrible.
The map is god awful. Yeah.
But the cool thing about it is that the in-game signage is very good.
Yep. Yeah. It's easier to find where you're going when you see something that's like research lab.
Totally. And they tell you where to go. There's arrows or signs. Like, it feels like an office building. So again, it's complete 0 or 100 feast or famine with this game, where there's so many cool things but also just extremely irritating things all at the same time.
And on top of that, there's even things with like the physics engine, right? Like, there are because you can throw everything sort of has physics attached to it, and there are times when it just so like laughably lightweight that it breaks my immersion. Right,
like, you're just like lightly tipping over a huge desk.
Well, like, there's a great sequence when you enter an area that has clocks, right? And it's this like weird time stuff. Love it, love the fight, love the lore. Those clocks are like plastic children's toy balloon clocks. Like, it's so comical. And the reason, I think, is because you need to be able to pick them up. Like, they all basically share the same sort of logic for how they behave as physics objects, and it can kind of break the game at times.
Oh man. Okay. I mean, I feel like people probably have a sense of what this game is for now. Again, I will say, at times this was extremely annoying to the point where I just wanted to stop playing it. And other times I think this is one of the best games of this year.
Yeah.
And so it's just choose what you want.
Yeah, I can see why people would like this game. Here's what I will say, though. I think two things. The conversation around Control when it first came out felt to me like a lot of confirmation bias. It felt like this has been a year where, to be perfectly honest, there's not a whole lot of great AAA games. We're in that weird space between console releases. You know, we are getting towards the end of the year. It's officially October. Yeah. And there's not even a handful of games that I would say hold a candle to the amount of great games that came out last year or especially the year before that, right?
Yeah.
I think Control came out at an interesting time where there wasn't a whole lot of single-player sort of AAA gorgeous-looking games, and Control is a gorgeous-looking game. And so
talk about that, but she's incredible-looking.
Yeah, and I think the music is pretty good. Like, there's a lot of good qualities about Control, but I think a lot of the positive sentiment that I've heard about it can partially be explained by just there not being a whole lot of options, and people want to really like it. And I think there's a lot of reasons why you would want to like Control. But man, like, I felt like a real Debbie Downer every time I had to tell a coworker, you know what, to be honest, this game is not as good as you think it is. You
know? Okay. I guess we should talk a little bit about the story.
Yep.
If I talk about the ashtray maze, is that part of the story, or can I?
Well, we could talk about it. Light spoilers for Control. I don't think we're going to go too far into the story because there's not a whole lot to get into.
Yeah, it's very X-Files-y in a weird way. It's literally X-Files. Like, the whole X-Files thing was Mulder's sister was kidnapped, and this one is Jesse's brother is kidnapped.
There you go. Yeah, exactly. Perfect. I think the janitor is the best character in the game.
Ati
is the coolest, weirdest character I have seen in a video game in a very long time. Mad respect. Yeah. The Ash Maze sequence is one of the worst experiences I've had in a game this year, and I legitimately wanted to stop playing the game more than any other moment.
Are you serious? That was bar none my favorite part of the game.
The music is let's set the stage for people.
Okay.
They could be the judge. You find headphones or whatever that lets you go through this.
Those are Ati's headphones that he uses to, you know, do whatever inside the oldest house.
It turns out Ati is really into fucking heavy metal music because
Finnish heavy metal.
There is a Finnish heavy metal song that I assume is written for Control because they use the words control, or rather control, a lot while you're fighting through that sequence, and you're going through this like weird maze that is changing shape and form. Changing shape and form, fine. But man, like, it just felt really tacky to me. It just felt like something that we would have seen out of the first Max Payne. Like something, you know, early aughts action game where you're just like, here's your fucking cool weapon and some metal music. Now kill everybody. Yeah. And at the end, Jesse's even like, that was fucking awesome. Or she says something crazy like that.
She does say that was awesome.
You were in this like life and death scenario. I don't believe for a second she would have said realistically that was awesome, because it wasn't awesome. Like, a bunch of random people that were once human show up and try to murder you.
So I, again, by far my favorite part of the game.
Because, I mean, do you see what I'm saying? How bizarrely.
Well, I mean, I agree with you. And I think it's because it was so absurd that I loved it. The fact that, because I just started thinking about, this is what keeps Ati. I mean, clearly the headphones are an object of power.
Yeah.
And this is the thing that has allowed Ati to not only navigate the oldest house for who knows how many decades. I mean, this is clearly a supernatural character, but also it gives him the power to navigate the oldest house. It protects him from any of the various oddities of the oldest house. And it describes something about this character that is even funnier than the character originally was.
That's true.
This character is just an old headbanger.
Yeah. I mean, I was reading Ati himself as being more powerful than you would think.
He's very much a Yoda or George, relevant to you now, a Guinan type character.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, because there's a moment where you go to find Ati because he's on vacation. And his vacation is like this weird, otherworldly, like underground space that's super cool looking. Like that.
But it's also kind of the forest. Like there's weird FMV superimposed on it.
Like that stuff is great. And I'm like, man, Ati's got some godlike powers, clearly. And I don't know if it's just the Finnish heavy metal music or what, but yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, again, to me, it just felt like narratively the same problem that the rest of the game had, was just it's all over the place, you know? And that scene was just so, like, 90s action film that it just really rubbed me the wrong way. Because what, so, you know, what I want, right? Like the moments to me that are that shine are the moments that are more like quiet, creepy, unsettling, you versus a magical object, not you versus a bunch of enemies while heavy metal music is playing, you know?
I think the one of the reasons why I gave it a narrative pass as well is there was some groundwork laid earlier where Jesse has this monologue about for what I don't know. I actually liked this part of the story where Jesse didn't know why, but she felt at home in the oldest house.
Yeah.
Where she became the director suddenly, which she admits is crazy and weird, but something about the oldest house, the internal logic seemed to make sense to her. And there was even a point where she said something like, enjoyment isn't the right word, but I'm kind of enjoying this, or I feel
right.
This feels right. She's fulfilling the role that she feels like she should be doing. And so this was the most extreme version of that where, and again, part of this goes back to the mechanics. I did the ashtray maze in one shot. No deaths.
Jesus, dude.
Like an amazing.
Maybe
like,
that's why, because I had to listen to that fucking heavy metal music at least 4 or 5 run throughs.
I will say that the other reason, not only just narratively, but again, I went through that. That was an unbroken sequence for me. No deaths. It was I felt the best, most at home with all of the powers. I was dynamically stringing the powers together. I was running from room to room. It was just a great mechanical experience too, set with the backdrop of the shredding music. And
yeah.
It made me feel like how Jesse must have felt at that time where she has finally reached the apex of her powers and she is comfortable in them.
Yeah, it's so funny because the moments that I'm thinking are like my favorite, like going into the maze before you get the headphones on. Like that's cool to me. That's the really interesting, like weird sci-fi, creepy, slow stuff that I'm into.
I mean, I think that stuff is cool too, but there, I can't lie. One of the first things in my head that I thought after I finished that ashtray maze was, man, that was awesome. And then she's like, man, that was awesome.
Dude, it's so funny because in my mind, I was like, that was fucking lame. And then she's like, that was awesome. I'm like, don't tell me how to feel about this game.
I think the other thing, because for whatever reason, you know, and as we discussed earlier, like there's a lot of randomness to it where I just had a really good run through that, through the maze. I really appreciated how through a clever combination of just song choice and clever cuts to the songs, if you go through it unbroken, it is a great soundtrack to that maze where it slows down and speeds up. They do some cool little trickery around cutting between tracks of the songs and cutting them off in a nice way. But it was almost like one of those Far Cry 3 type moments where just the soundtrack adds so much to the sequence of events that you're doing.
Yeah, fair enough, Scott. It's so funny that you love that scene, because I remember when you had asked me like several days ago or whatever, like, oh, did you do that maze? And I thought it's because we both hated it, and it blows my mind that's because you loved it.
But I still think we are coming down very similarly on the game, which is this game is at times amazing and at times terrible, and it just kind of nets out to be okay.
Yep. I 100% agree with that.
Should we say anything about the story before we wrap up? I guess official spoilers here for plot points of the game.
I think the one official spoiler I would talk about is the fake credits. I thought were pretty cool.
Yeah.
I thought that was really neat. I love.
And then the
idea.
Subsequent waking up of like an office drone. You're just, you know.
Yeah, like running around person. And like, yeah, exactly. Like getting coffee and not being sure really how to progress. That was kind of neat. I legitimately thought that was the ending and was like, that's dumb. That's bullshit. Of course this game would end that way. But it doesn't. I mean, it still ends a little bit, I don't know, with a whimper rather than a bang.
I mean, they've already announced DLC episodes. So I think that is part of it. Like they're trying to set up more things to do.
Would you play the DLC?
I don't know. I mean, it was I ended this game on a pretty positive note because I had strung all of the powers together, and I kind of want to, I don't know. I'm almost interested in watching those other episodes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I feel the same way. I mean, you're better off just getting SCP Foundation.
time, yeah, you know? Yeah. I mean, you could read the SCP wiki. You could watch X Files. Yeah. It's a very similar vibe. Yeah. I mean, I think I'm trying to think if there's any other like big story points.
I mean, there's stuff Dylan with like the brother and like mm-hmm. I don't know. At the end, they try to really make you feel this connection with the entity that has sort of attached itself to you.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
And I think it's meant to be a sort of reveal of like, oh, it wasn't really this thing. Or I mean, the game doesn't really fall down hard on what it is. Like, it could just be you. You could just be crazy. It could be right. A weird connection to another entity. It could be, you know, the child of this other entity. There right. are times where I think the game is effectively conveying you, the player, as this sort of thing that's with her, which I think is cool.
I was actually just going to say that, like, it's a nice cipher for this other entity that is guiding her, i.e. you.
Yeah, a voiceless agent that helps her out, which I think right. could be really, really neat. Yeah. I don't think that the twist or the thing sort of dying but then really not dying or whatever, like, it didn't really land with me. I didn't think that the brother stuff, I mean, it literally was not resolved by the end of the game. And
yeah, he's just in a coma, right?
Yeah, so it really just feels like you come into this place to do something and then you don't, I mean, you do it, but it doesn't have the sort of triumphant moment because it feels like they're setting up for DLC or they're setting up for yeah. Control 2.
Yeah.
You know, like you take on the mantle of the, whatever, the head of the FBC.
Yeah, the director.
Yeah, the director. But you sort of know she's going to do that from the beginning because the side character is like, yeah, you're destined to be the director. And it's pretty fucking obvious. Like, yeah. Even when you pick yeah. up the gun, right? Like, oh, only the director can pick up the gun. So this must yep. mean you're the new director. Everyone yeah. calls you director. Like, it is a known thing. So right. there's not really any arc there for me to be interested in. So I don't know. I mean, it was fine. Again, I think the more interesting parts have literally nothing to do with Jesse or her brother.
Yeah, as the little adventures you get into, you know, the clock sequence, or
yeah,
I really like the model city sequence, like yep. that sort of stuff is even just standalone, it's cool or creepy or surreal, and
yeah.
and that's, you know, that's the cool aspect of it versus its place in the overall right. story.
One more shout out, by the way, an inspiration / ripoff for Control. I loved all the hotel sequences in Control,
oh, yeah.
like weird little puzzles, and you pull the light, and then you end up in this hotel. Again, yep. the Lost Room, I mentioned it earlier, old show from like 2007, but great show. And one of the core fundamental plots of the Lost Room is that there is a hotel, or rather there's a magical object, there's a key, and you can put it into any door, and if you open the door, you enter a hotel room in like Nevada in like the 1980s.
Oh yeah, that's clear. I never saw that show, but clearly that is inspired.
Right, and then when yeah. you go inside the hotel room and you close the door, when you open the door again, you can be opening any door in existence and reappear somewhere else. Right.
Right.
It is full on what they took inspiration from in Control. So again, it was another moment where I was like, "This is awesome." I saw it better on this TV right. show from 2007. That was super cool. So anyway, if you are into Control, give that show a watch. It's very good.
I mean, it's kind of, it was funny, we were talking about this stuff in the context of Mass Effect and Star Trek and all of these things before we were recording, but this is probably the best homage to all of those, you know, paranormal fiction
yep.
That we've ever had in a game, and maybe that's the value of it. You know, where it's not necessarily the best narrative or the characters aren't necessarily the best, but there's something just technically so proficient about clicking that light three times and then all of a sudden smash cut directly into the hotel
yep.
pretty seamlessly, like no load or anything like
yeah.
that. I mean, there's just a lot of cool technical tricks that
yeah.
add to the paranormal of the entire game.
And I've said it before on the podcast, I love it when video games do that. They make
yeah.
the surreal and the sort of nightmare unreality so vivid because it is in the fiction of the video game, it is real, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, all of the scenes from the Batman games when Scarecrow would cause you to hallucinate and you would
right.
be in a new environment that didn't obey the normal rules of the world yep. that you lived in. Awesome, really cool stuff. And it's actually great to see Remedy still doing that because one of the first games I remember really doing that was the first Max Payne when you're
oh, yeah.
running through a hallway. And like you can hear the cries of your wife and there's all this yep. like weird surreal stuff. So it feels like they get it. Like they understand that just because, you know, you are making a video game doesn't mean you can't really bend reality, or rather
right.
that it gives you the power to bend reality in a way that's more real and interesting than a lot of people really use, because they're trying to make things that are a bit more, you know, realistic, or more, you know, more set and grounded in the real world.
And even, you know, the opposite, it's like their philosophy seems to be, you should lean into that. And you should lean. And also, I mean, I've for various reasons, I had to play good chunks of this game with headphones on, and the sound design is incredible. Those yep. guns sound raw as fuck.
Yeah,
I mean,
super cool.
Like the sound of your psychokinetic powers sounds amazing. And then also there's this surreal stuff that has the same amount of grounded tension behind it.
Yep.
And it's almost like, why would you hew so close to verisimilitude when you don't have to, because you're making a video game?
Yep.
It's like, it's a good philosophy to have, because it gets you very cool effects that you don't have to be bound by the real world.
Totally.
Yeah, it's a fascinating game. It's it's one of the most interesting games I played for a long time, just because of just how up and down I was on it the entire time.
Yeah, for real. I mean, it's gotten really good reviews, so I'm sure a lot of people are enjoying it, but yeah, a lot of mixed feelings.
I mean, it seems like it's also just, it was a realization of what Quantum Break was kind of supposed to be in a weird way.
Yeah.
Like that, it feels like that game had a lot of other weird psychokinetic ability type stuff, but
yeah.
I mean, I'm happy that I played it, and it's also hilarious to compare notes with yeah. you about it.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I guess we'll close the file there. experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is our website. Come on down, bring your friends, explore our oldest house, find some really old episodes.
If any of those episodes start talking to you, don't worry, it's fine. Totally normal.
Yes, indeed.
All right, until next time, everyone. Thank you for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Ciao. This is where I'll put the fucking awful metal music. No.